America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
Good morrow, everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight on 77 WABC. I'm superstar Frank Moreno back in the saddle and grateful to be back. I'll give you some highlights of my trip over the course of the next couple hours, but I am thrilled to be back talking to you, especially at a time when there's so many exciting things happening. Some big news on Friday, and I know my colleague Curtis Lee touched upon this a great deal over the weekend, but for those of you that haven't heard about this, the City of New York and the Legal Aid Society announced on Friday that they have reached a temporary settlement over the city's right to shelter. The settlement will preserve the city's right to shelter, which is frequently and inaccurately referred to as New York's sanctuary city law. That is totally different. But this right to shelter requires that the city provide shelter to all people in need of it while allowing the city to continue to limit migrants' shelter stays, adult migrants' shelter stays, to 30 days. So under the terms of this new settlement, newly arrived adult migrants will receive an initial 30-day shelter placement if they have nowhere else to stay. Adult migrants under the age of 23 will get an additional allowance and receive a 60-day initial shelter placement, which they don't currently have under the city's practices. Now, this is a huge positive. You probably saw the front page of Sunday's New York Daily News where they were saying how this is going to lead to pandemic homelessness and people being put out on the street. Honestly, there may be a little bit of that. But I think, honestly, once the word gets out all around the world that you cannot come to New York City and be expected to be taken care of in perpetuity, I think you may see a reduction in the tide of migrants that are coming here on a daily basis. Mayor Adams, to his credit, has been working hard to get this right to shelter consent decree changed, and finally, it has happened. So this is a huge step in the right direction. Doesn't end the problem, not by a long shot, but this is a big, big positive.
Beam me up!
To be continued.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
Good morrow, everyone. This is The Other Side of Midnight on 77 WABC. I'm superstar Frank Moreno. A lot of folks have been wondering, what is Bob Menendez going to do? I'm not talking about the forthcoming trial that he's going to be facing. I'm talking about the re-election that he may or may not be running for this year. NBC News reporting some really interesting information. They are reporting that indicted New Jersey Democratic Senator Bob Menendez, former leader of the Democratic Party in his home county, a Democrat powerhouse for many, many decades, is considering running for re-election in November as an independent. Two sources who spoke with Menendez directly told NBC News that he's now making calls to allies about his record and career and is apparently preparing to collect petitions to run in November as an independent. If Menendez were to run as a Democrat, he'd need to come up with 1,000 signatures by March 25th. So time's not necessarily on his side, but running as an independent would give him a little bit more time. In that case, he would only need 800 signatures by June 4th to qualify for the ballot. Now, why would he do this? What NBC News is saying is this is about Menendez's legal bills. Menendez's legal bills are mounting, and he can only fundraise if he's a candidate on the ballot. So it's not unheard of to use campaign funds to cover legal expenses. We've seen President Trump do that. We've seen a number of political figures do that over the years. Well, here's what doesn't necessarily make sense to me. Menendez could form a legal defense fund, as Mayor Adams has done, and just have people contribute to that. Why go through this charade of actually running for re-election? Well, what Politico New Jersey has pointed out is that they think that Menendez, who has a pretty decent relationship with Trump and whose donors have a pretty good relationship with Trump, that there could be an angle here that a lot of people aren't talking about. They believe that there's a chance that Menendez could be negotiating with the Trump people and the Republicans to run as an independent so that it splits the Democratic vote in New Jersey and allows a Republican to slip in to the U.S. Senate with a plurality. I have no idea if this is the case. There hasn't been a Republican senator in New Jersey since, I think, Clifford Case. And if New Jersey had ranked choice voting, they wouldn't need to worry about this. But that's what's being reported by Politico New Jersey and other outlets. It's fascinating to watch. I am not a fan of Bob Menendez. I would never vote for him. But I don't like to see prosecutors deciding elections, whether it's Donald Trump or Bob Menendez. My attitude is let the people decide.
Beam me up.
To be continued.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WBC.
Local Spotlight.
Obviously, New York is still reeling from this horrible shooting on the subway on Thursday in the middle of rush hour on the A train in Brooklyn. I mean, just a horrific scene. I've taken the A train at this very stop, and it's just a terrible thing. You're trying to get home from work or go somewhere else. The last thing you expect, unfortunately, this used to be unheard of. Now it's becoming something you are starting to expect a bit more, is for gunfire to break out. By the way, Kathy Hochul, the governor, to her credit, has prioritized subway safety. She's talked about the National Guard. I don't understand why she wouldn't just acquiesce to Mayor Adams' demand for more police. But okay, at least she's trying to do something. What I don't understand is what she was saying on an FM radio station over the weekend and elsewhere, that this is just a blip on the radar, that the subways are still safe. Well, first of all, this does nothing to show that the subways are still safe. This does nothing to reduce the impression that people have that the subways are dangerous. And I would just love to think what she says is going well. It's not going well. Her plan has not done anything to reduce shootings. But there's an aspect of this that has not been talked about a great deal, at least not that I've heard. The NYPD chief of department, Jeffrey Madry, did a press conference on Friday with the deputy commissioner of operations, Kaz Daughtry, and deputy commissioner of public information, Tariq Shepard. And basically, the NYPD is claiming the act of fare evasion played a significant role in Thursday afternoon's subway shooting. Isn't that interesting? So during this press conference, these three top members of city government indicated that the 36-year-old individual who was shot with his own firearm had skirted paying the fare before entering the system. Madry said, it's important that the NYPD enforces quality of life. It's important that we enforce that service and people who are not paying the fare. Oftentimes, we see people enter the subway station looking to cause harm, and they never pay the fare. So this is why we stress to our officers, it's important to address theft of service. He's exactly right. So according to the department, the gunman was able to access the subway system by ducking in through open emergency exit doors, skipping out on paying the subway's $2.90 fare. Fare evasion is a real problem. And until we can do something about fare evasion, the more we're going to see these unsavory characters assaulting people, menacing people, and yes, even shooting people. We've got to put a stop to fare evasion. Unfortunately, this is a problem that only seems to be getting worse. To be continued.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen New Bridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen New Bridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
The Other Side of Midnight.
77 WNBC.
Local Spotlight.
One of the things that used to be a staple of New York City traffic was the yellow taxi. And yet now it's become fewer and fewer and farther in between. My son is obsessed with cars and he's got a toy bus. He's got all sorts of toy vehicles of every sort, trucks, and he's got some yellow taxis that people have given him. And when we walk around New York City, those are the items that it's the rarest to point out to him. There's plenty of buses around. There's plenty of trucks around. But it's rarer and rarer for us to see a yellow taxi. And it turns out it's not just my perception. The number of yellow taxis on New York City streets is growing a little bit post-pandemic, but passenger demand has not kept pace. And now, and I never thought I'd see this day, a third of taxi medallions are remaining dormant. That's the word not from me, but from the Taxi and Limousine Commission. They had over 9,000 taxis in service in January, 1,000 more than the same time last year. That amounts to about a 12% increase in the yellow taxi fleet, and it's the largest number of working taxis since the pandemic hit in 2020. But that January figure exceeds the 8,800 cabs the TLC reported that were on the street in December of last year. But yellow cabs made only half as many trips in January of 2024 as they did in January of 2020. So while the number of available yellow taxis is up by around 12% over the last year, taxi trips citywide have only increased 4%. The law allows the yellow taxi fleet to be capped at 13,587 cars, which are allowed to make street hails. Ubers can't and car services can't, at least not legally, and they have to be marked with a TLC medallion. So with roughly 9,000 medallions currently paired with cars, a third of medallions are currently in storage, meaning their owners have not associated them with a car. Decades ago, it would have been unthinkable for any medallion owner to leave their medallions idle. From the late 30s to the late 90s, the taxi business was booming. There was a big article about this in the Sunday New York Daily News, but it first started to decline in 2019 with these rideshare apps, Uber and Lyft. And then obviously the pandemic was a very, very negative thing for a lot of these medallion owners and these cab drivers. Look, I have a lot of nostalgia for the era of the yellow taxi cab. I love a good yellow taxi cab, and I'd love to see them survive, and I hope they're able to thrive, the medallion owners and the drivers alike. To be continued.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.